Hey, you got time for a good quick story?
Absolutely. Sure. We got like 28 minutes. So we have 28 more minutes.
Well, let me I have to tell this story. I tell it everywhere I speak. And when I was in Atlanta, I was a starting pitcher in those days, and I had a really difficult night. I wrote a book in about 95 called Answers to Baseball's Most Asked Questions. And so and one of the questions in there are statements, you know, what does it mean when you get knocked out of the box? That's an old baseball term, get knocked out of the box. Mm-hmm. Well, it means when the manager comes out during the course of an inning and takes a pitcher out of the game, when he's not doing too good. So on one particular night, I wasn't doing too good, and the manager comes and removes me for the game, and I'm, quote, knocked out of the box. Well, I went to the dressing room. In the dressing room in the old stadium in Atlanta, you had to go past first. Modern-day dugouts, you lead to the dressing room, but that wasn't the case here. You had to walk down past first base, go down under the stadium to the dressing room.
Through the crowd?
Pardon me?
Through the crowd?
Yeah, well, you go under the stadium, but the people are telling me just how good I am, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my self-esteem's about 2 inches off the ground. But I get down and get dressed, and I walk back down the runway, and I'm going to check the scoreboard. You never know, you know. So just about the time I got to the end of the runway, the only thing above the ground's my head. I hear the crack of the bat, and I turn and look, and a line drive foul ball is coming right at me, and I cannot get out of the way of it, and it hits me squarely, but just above on my eye level, on my brow.
Ooh.
Down for the count I go. Okay. No one knows I'm there till the ball boy comes to retrieve the ball, and I'm laying out, and it's already starting to swell, and the seams of the ball were perfectly placed.
Oh my
god!
Right
on my forehead. So that ambulance comes, takes me over to Grady Hospital. They check me out over there. They found out what my mother already knew. I had a hard head. So, but the Constitution headlines of the sports page the next day said Vickery knocked out twice. but the subheading.
I needed this right here.
Subheading was the best part. X-rays of head show nothing.
Okay.
So I have used that all these years.
Uh-huh. X-rays of head shows nothing.
Yeah. Examined my head and didn't find anything. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great sort. Well, that was just an uncanny thing to be just in that right spot at the right time within a tiny, 8-inch radius ball.
The Sporting News had an article probably 2 years after that said I probably was hitting the head more different ways than anybody in the history of baseball. Umpires, catchers, line drives, infielders. I mean, you know, and a ball girl.
The ball girl hit you in the head?
We had unusual to have a ball girl in those days, but we had a ball girl, and she threw the ball and whop right beside the head.
So now that's why they have helmets.
Day, yeah, right? You know what?
That's why there's helmets.
It's a good thing I got hair, honestly, because I got lumps all over my head.
Well, that's incredible. So we're speaking with Lou Vickery and the baseball past, so... Gosh, tell us more stories. I mean,
well, you know,
when did you transition from playing to coaching or whatever you want to tell us
about? Well, unfortunately, I had arm problems. So I partially tore my rotator cuff.
Right.
And that was fairly young, too.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yeah. That was in 65. So, yeah, I was still in my mid, I hadn't even made my mid-20s. And I'd already was career basically over. But I tried 3 more years.
As a relief pitcher?
Yeah, I tried that basically because I wanted to get a little further along in my education.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, let me tell you, I had 3 great pitchers, slow, slower, and even slower.
Okay.
And so I didn't throw real hard, but I threw a lot of breaking stuff. Well,
what does that mean, breaking stuff?
Curveballs, sliders.
Okay.
The ball changes direction. I just wasn't noted for throwing one straight, and even my fastball had a lot of tail in it. And I always tell the kid, everybody, I said the reason it tailed so much was because it just ran out of steam, so you know it would just drift off. But it was interesting that then I ended my career. I coached 1 year at Troy because I graduated just about in March, so baseball season was just starting. So I coached there, and then I decided that I needed to get in the business world. I had a family. And I love coaching, but it just was not enough money to what I had been accustomed to. So I went to New York and became a stockbroker with Merrill Lynch for a few years. So
okay.
That was an interesting thing. I have to tell you one quick story about that. I was there for 9 months in training because I had no business experience, right? So I had an extended training period. I worked in the bond department. And so when they came time to sell the bonds on the airport for Dallas, the Dallas New Dallas-Fort Worth, I was sent to Dallas-Fort Worth to or Dallas and to help sell the bonds for the new airport. And we formed these civilian teams. And the head of my civilian team was a guy named Ross Perot.
Huh.
And so...
Wow.
And we outsold all the other three teams. We outsold them by ourselves. But he would take no from no one. I can hear him on the phone now. You know, we need to get this airport. We got to have this airport. We need your money. And the bonds were 7.75 in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine what that was like. But anyway, that business wasn't quite for me. But I did find a business I really enjoyed, and that was in the training field. And so I answered an ad in Wall Street Journal, and I found out when I was with Merrill, one thing I found out when I went out and spoke to groups, on from investment groups, that I did pretty good on my feet. They liked my cornball, you know, Southern stories and my baseball stories. And so I got involved in the training business and did that for 29 years.
Okay.
And that's where I did most of my across-the-country traveling. Between baseball and then traveling with that, I've been in every city with 150,000 people in our country. So,
just this week you had a speaking engagement in Robertsdale.
Yes, correct.
What was that?
That's actually comes up today.
Oh, it's today?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
can't keep you too late, can we?
Yeah, well, hold on a second. I spoke in Spanish for it on Monday, Tuesday. But I'm getting, then I got a really big deal coming up at the end of next month, September, in Birmingham. I'm going to be at a convention. It's the first one I've done in quite a while.
Okay.
So I'm really looking forward to it. A Loan Depot, it's a mortgage company, is having an annual meeting there. So I'll be there for that. One of the books I've done, let me share with you. My grandmother was a Creek Indian, and so my dad's mother. And so I did research, took me 2.5 years of research, but I researched and wrote a book called The Rise of the Porch Band of Creek Indians.
Okay.
And with the idea that it would just be something family-wise, well, it ended up on the Amazon top 10 Native Americans bestseller list. And so it did really well. And then the Historical Society spoke to me about expanding it. So I have a book out now called The Alabama Creek Indians, which really gives a detail. But I'm going to have an opportunity to go to the University of Alabama and speak for a period of six. I got six sessions I'm going to do there on the Creek Indians as part of an educational program.
That sounds fascinating. What books will you have here? And what books will be available through Amazon or whatnot?
Well, because of COVID, we had so many books kind of stack up on each other. My goal was to do one a year.
Mm-hmm.
But because of COVID, we got set back. But I'm going to actually bring four tomorrow night. No, that's not true. I'm going to bring five.
Okay.
Because the book that I have with me here, Finding Your Social Groove in a Social Media World, has not been launched yet. That launch comes up next month. But we would like for people to...
So this will be a sneak preview for
that? Yes, it will be.
Okay.
And in fact, what we call the dummy copy just came. It just arrived. And we see now, as you look at that, it's too dark. So we're...
Right.
Dana Vickery is a co-author with me in this book, and she will change that coloring from black to white so you can be... As you can see, it's and the folks at home cannot see it, but but it's a little too dark, and so
that's why you do that sample.
That's right. That's why you do a dummy copy. Mm-hmm. So before you release it, you want to make sure. But
so what's the new book about?
This book is, social media is such a big part of our world.
Oh, absolutely.
But what has happened is, I think we're losing some of our skills, our interpersonal skills,
mm-hmm.
as a result of that. I tell you what really prompted the movement toward writing this book was I'm in an airport, and there are two kids communicating to each other with their fingers sitting side by side. And they're not talking to you. You know, and I think we're losing some of that interpersonal skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you miss the one thing you miss in social media. You miss body language. You miss the opportunity for expressions, you know, that you can. And then we were born, the Greeks called it, the Greeks mm-hmm. called it the meta message. And meta message. And there's a message that occurs between people when they're together face to face. And it's a remove message. And that's what, you know, if somebody walks in a room that you really care about, you sense it, you feel it.
Okay, sure.
You know? And so this book really gets back to listening skills, questioning skills, tone of voice.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a rudimentary basic book. That's the best way, resource book.
You okay. know, Facebook has got that new Meta, M-E-T-A thing.
Yes, that's where it comes from.
Oh, my goodness. That's kind of spooky, isn't it?
When I saw that, I said, hey, they knew what the Greeks were because that's really what they're doing. They're trying to express that you can – there's a message there. But I think that message comes through being personal, where you have a personal relationship.
Through the interpersonal, yeah.
Yeah. Let me share the other quickly with the other four books that we'll have tomorrow with us. I mentioned the Alabama Creek Indians.
Uh-huh.
Coach Sonny Smith, which – was at Auburn, he was a basketball coach at Auburn. He does the color analyst work for the Auburn Basketball Network now. He and I did a book called Winning the Head Game, Elite Status. It's the key to elite status for athletes. But let me get it right. It's called Winning the Head Game, the Key to Elite Athletic Status.
Okay.
So, the one thing I found out in pro ball was that there are kids in high school that with the kind of talent that you could play as well as a guy playing in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is what happens from the shoulders up.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the ability to be able to, and just like one of the things I talk about is pressure. You know, pressure is a privilege.
Oh, sure. Okay.
If you didn't have pressure, you wouldn't be in a situation where you could make a difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where you... One of the things that makes a difference between somebody that's good and somebody that has the opportunity to be great is how they handle those type of situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've covered high school sports for 30 years now, and you see kids out on the field, and sometimes it just comes down to who wanted it more.
That's exactly right.
You know, one team may be more talented, they may be more athletic, they may be more physical, but if the other team wants it more, they're going to get it.
Like that's you right. said, the head game.
That's yeah. right.
All right, so that's, and I think you've got another book or two?
Yeah, I have one called Reach Beyond and Find Your Path to Success. It's a lot of stories about people, you know, this is some of those stories we were talking about. That there are about 40 stories in it of people who somewhat may have struggled and found a way to make it work. I have three personal stories in there from a family. You know, my 99-year-old mother weighed less than 2 pounds when she was born. And actually doctors told her, the parents, she was a 16th child. 16th
wow.
child born to a 55-year-old man and a 42-year-old woman.
Kind of the run of the litter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's right. And she and the doctors told, and my grandfather got a gallon jar, an old Big Mouth gallon jar, put cotton in the bottom, put that child inside that jar, and put a lamp over it and created an incubator.
Wow.
Now, this is his 16th child. He's doing this.
Mm-hmm. 99 years ago.
Yes. That was in 1923.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, and your brother is was or is former Daphne's coach.
Now, that's my first cousin.
Your first cousin.
First cousin.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Glenn Vickery was a coach. At, and my brother well played with the Washington Senators organization. He was a probate, but he was a catcher.
Okay.
So I was a pitcher and he was a catcher. He's a year younger than I am.
He kind of runs in the Vickery
bloodline. Yeah, our dad was a left-handed pitcher too. So.
Was he? Okay.
Well, you know, good training when you're a kid makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, yeah, it does. And I don't think we had a choice. You know, our destiny was set when we were growing up, you know. But I remember him getting us out in the backyard and then pitching the ball. And he even had a frame made for me with various pockets in it so I could throw – you know, the low and away, up and tight, that type of thing. Very interesting concept, Ed, that he was kind of forward-looking in that way, but he was determined we were going to be ballplayers, that's for sure.
Okay.
Well, that's a good thing. I played in the backyard with my boys, football, baseball, in the front yard, the basketball, mm-hmm. for many years as a single mom when my kids were young, and used to say, one day, I'm going to retire on the NFL and be the Campbell Soup Mom. And I joked about that for many, many years, and I got this close.
Yeah.
So close.
This close,
yeah.
You know, with my son, Robert, that played at Auburn.
Didn't he go with training with Dallas?
No, he went to the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
First, he went to the Atlanta Falcons for about 2 weeks. Somebody got injured. They dropped him and got this guy. For a different guy.
Yeah.
So as soon as that happened, the Green Bay Packers picked him up. And he played on the field 3 preseason games. So we all went just in case it was the only time we saw him on an NFL field. But it didn't feel like the NFL.
Right.
Green Bay's like being at Ladd Stadium, right. You know.
Yeah.
But it was still very, very cool.
That's great.
And
I do have one other book I'm going to bring, and I want to share. There's a real story behind it. It's my only novel.
Oh, a novel. Okay.
Yeah. And it's we've sold the movie rights to it last fall. The book's been out for 20 years, but we reissued it, and it's a story, an interesting story. I wrote my first notes on it in 1962 when I played in Atlanta.
Huh. Wow.
And it took me almost 40 years to get it published, okay? But the big reason for that is I wasn't winning the head game, Mark. I didn't believe, because I was told, boy, athletes don't write novels. They write, you know, but their exploits or whatever. You know, uh-huh. So I just kind of set it on the back burner. And then when I found out I had leukemia, and I've since have been, you know, I'm in remission, have been for years. But at the time, wasn't sure what was going to happen. And then my doctor suggested, if there's something you really want to do, do it. Well, I think it helped me because it gave me a focus. And I have a book called A Touch of Gray. Touch of Gray. And it's a story about two kids growing up in South Alabama in the early 50s. And one is black and one is white, and they're best friends. They live only 100 yards apart. And it's a Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer type book of the things that they got into. But obviously, the culture at that time seemed very difficult to maintain a relationship. So between the ages of 9 and 13 is... That's what the time period for the book, and it really was. It was very well received, and I'm glad we got re-release on that. I don't know what the movie thing will be, because they have a 5-year window, and you know, that's not out of my control.
That's exciting, though.
It was exciting when I was contacted about that.
Did you put it in the contract that you want a cameo appearance?
Yep. Yes, I did.
Good, smart man.
You play the grandpa on the porch.
That's
or something?
Right. I can play the grandpa. That's
grandpa
exactly
on the
right.
porch.
Actually, there's a story in there about
get out of my yard.
There's a story in there about a. Guy filling up, you know, in those days they'd fill your gas tank up, you know, they'd come out and do it.
Uh-huh.
And there's a story in there. I said, that's me. I'll be the guy filling up the gas tank.
Okay.
I'll do my cameo appearance.
Get you a pair of overalls, get that rag hanging out from your back pocket.
That's right. Amen. I know that gig.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Were there true reflections of your childhood growing up expressed in that book?
Yes.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
But
we wrote it as a novel for legal reasons, okay? Because you didn't know exactly what you had to change the name, some of the scenery. Not all the stories in there happened to the same two kids. See, there were others that had happened and occurred.
Right.
And one of the interesting ones was a crop duster that ended up choking out and landing on top of a tremendous oak tree. And getting a guy down from top of an oak tree in those days was not an easy task. So,
in case you're tuning in and wondering who the third voice is, we are speaking with Lou Vickery, former Major League Baseball player coach. He is a motivational speaker and a prolific author, and he will be our guest tomorrow night for First Friday Art Walk Open House Lou, if you get here about 5, we'll open to the public at 5:30. Some folks get here a little bit early. Mm-hmm. We'll have wine and refreshments and water, and we just have a party in the radio station.
Well, I sent out some notices to folks, and I said we're going to have plenty of horses and herbs.
So horses and herbs,
horse duvers.
Well, anyway, I couldn't spell it, so I just said, "Well, they'll understand what I'm talking about." Right?
That's funny. You can just share my event, then, okay? Yeah. Do that
Amen.
Next time.
Copy and paste.
You don't have your editor there to help you, do you?
Let me say one more thing about A Touch of Gray. The title comes from the fact that you can take black and you take white and put it together, mm-hmm. and it creates gray. And that was the real purpose behind this.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. All the books are available to Amazon, and I have some of them available on my website, which is louvickerybooks.com. In fact, people can read the excerpts about mm-hmm. them there.
Lou so. Vickery, and Vickery is V-I-C-K-E-R-Y.
Correct.
Lou Vickery Books.com.
Yeah, I remember growing up in high school, one of my buddies, Keith Smith, he was black, and we were in band together, and we sat next to each other for 6 years, and we were good, but we were always cutting up and having fun, and right. Keith was a great guy, and we'd always hang out at the football games and stuff, but, you know, come 3 o'clock, we couldn't be friends.
That's right.
You know, it was Birmingham in the 1970s, and you know, it's like, all right, well, I'll see you tomorrow, buddy, you know, kind of
right.
thing. So it's good that times have changed.
Right.
You know, and it's good that we can look back and reflect on what was and, you know, take the good out of what was and, you know, because, anyway, I'll turn it back.
That's fine. No. And you're right. Because, you know, the big thing is to look at from an athletic standpoint. African-American kids pretty much dominate. Mm-hmm. Most of the sports world, and particularly in football and in basketball. Mm-hmm. And I think would in baseball if they would participate, but they don't participate in baseball like they do other sports. There's a young man that's in the big leagues at Minnesota about 8 years ago. His father called me through a cousin of mine who was actively engaged in coaching, and he was an outstanding baseball player and outstanding football player in college, trying to make a decision whether his son go to college to play football or baseball.
Which way to go?
And I asked him, well, how much money have they offered you for baseball? He said, $2 million. Take the money. and write in the contract if you want to, they pay for the college education. Because, see, that's money in the bank. And when mm-hmm. they got that kind of money invested in you, they're going to take every opportunity to do it right as far as preparation
right.
to be a big league player. And now he made the All-Star team this year.
Oh, good.
I won't mention the name, but that's
a good success story for sure.
Well, I wanted to do that in the book, but his dad really didn't want to do it.
Right, so. Mm-hmm. right. But we've got about 4 minutes left, so just a real quick, you also did radio shows for years.
Yeah, I did.
I think how we met is you were interested in doing a show here
right.
several years ago.
Well, I love Fairhope. Fairhope's a great town. Mm-hmm. I love being here. And so when I came here, I thought, well, I've retired because I was traveling back and forth and the south, what I call the southern tip of Alabama, where before you get the dip into the Baldwin County. Mm-hmm. Well, at any rate, for 14 years I did that and really enjoyed it. That was something I'd always wanted to do. I wanted to do a radio show. I started with other people involved, but then I was able to do 9 years pretty much on my own. And So I thoroughly enjoyed it.
But, and due to your status as this major league player and coach, you were able to get some real heavy hitter guests.
Oh, I did. I had a vice president of the United States, Dick Cheney, was with me. Jeff Sessions was a regular at that time. He was mm-hmm. a U.S. senator. And so it wasn't just a sports show. It was just general, you know, conversation. But I made some friends that are still friends today that are in Colorado, Southern Florida, Maine. I still communicate with them. So they're just outstanding people, and were great guests, really.
Remember when we were joking about that John Anderson song, Swangin'? Mm-hmm. He was getting a divorce, and he said, well, she wanted the royalties to his next song, so he wrote what he thought was the worst song ever, and it became a huge hit, and she got the proceeds. Lou came in later that day, and he heard us talk about that story. He said, I knew John.
Yeah.
He knows everybody. He knows everybody.
Well, it's, you know, one beautiful part about all the travel, and it's wonderful people I've met through the years. Somebody said, you probably have met over 1 million people. I said, probably close to 3 million. Yeah, who knows? But I have. I've met a lot of wonderful people, and this has been a blessing. I've had a lot of fun, I have to tell you.
Well, I tell you, you're an inspiration, because we've talked about this before, that mindset, that head game of an athlete to, you know, at your age, you're up playing tennis every day, you're out doing speaking engagements, you're writing a book a year. That's the mindset that's going to keep you young and keep you successful. And I admire you for that.
Well, thank you.
That's pretty awesome.
In life, do I have time to make one more statement?
Yes, you do.
Sure. All right. Well, you know, I am one of 150 guys and 75 years or older that play on the what they call the Super Senior Grand Prix. So I can travel. I could play all over the country. But I traveled down. I played the circuit in Florida.
The tennis.
For tennis, right. And I'm just real pleased that I carry rank number 47. But, you know, 47 across the country is not a bad deal, you know. So I hope to improve that next year. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, you meet a lot of wonderful people traveling there for their tennis, too. So
wow.
I'm just really, hey, I'm blessed to be here, folks.
Just living proof, you know, a body in motion stays in motion. So the more you get up and go, the better you're going to feel, and the younger, you know, longer you're going to live. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, and I appreciate you guys having me.
We are thrilled to have you. And for those that can't make it again, louvickerybooks.com. But we really, please come out and see us. Meet Lou and say hello. Many of you listen that we've never met. We're at 9 North Church Street, our Art Walk open house, tomorrow night from 5:30 until 8:00.